Welcome everyone. Oh, here we got a little light issue.
Oh, and turn it off and back on again.
We can reboot. That's always the answer. Just reboot. Whatever it is, all right?
Welcome to the film on our webs.
Well, welcome everyone. We were hoping to have a bigger turnout, but I think the cold weather and the rain has impacted our turnout. I was telling Dr. Petigo we usually have the room packed, but hopefully we'll have a few more people come in. Welcome to Dallas Philosophers Forum. We're a non-for-profit organization. We are dedicated to bringing philosophy, ideas, critical thinking to the DFW area. We are an all-volunteer group. No paid members on us, no paid staff members. But I want to thank everyone for coming out. We meet on the second and fourth Tuesday of the month from September through May. And first-time visitors, Robert, you're a first-time visitor. You found out about us through Meetup, right? You're a computer programmer. So we have a fair number of computer programmers that come to, I think, philosophy and programming. I think there's some commonality.
We got another first-time.
Okay, yes, sir. Yeah, what's your name?
It's Raphael.
Raphael, okay, welcome. How did you hear about us, Raphael? What's that?
Online.
Okay, very good. If you haven't paid already, please do so immediately after the lecture. It's $5, and David Rome is our treasurer. And students with an ID can attend for $2, and if you want to become a subscriber, the cost is $35 for 6 months. We have our spring schedule that's on our website. We talked about that. We have sessions coming up, speeches coming up on immigration and polarities, and what else we have coming up, David? We have materialism, right. We've got several coming up, and so that's the second, fourth Tuesday of the month. And then our website has a lot of the same information, www.philosophersforum.org. You can also get updates via Meetup as well. Okay, so our speaker tonight will speak for about 45 to 50 minutes, and we'll open up for questions. Please turn off your cell phones and put them on vibrate mode at this time, please. Our topic tonight is Africa. Perhaps the first time a topic, maybe not the first time, but it's been a long time since we've had this topic at the Dallas Philosophers Forum. And I read many years ago Burl Markham, who was a British-born Kenyan aviator, adventurer, and author. She wrote West for the Night. Has anybody read that book? It's about Africa. Okay, a few of you have. I love this quote about Africa. Africa is mystic. It is wild. It is a sweltering inferno. It is a photographer's paradise, a hunter's Valhalla, an escapist's utopia. It is what you will, and it withstands all interpretations. It is the last vestige of a dead world or the cradle of a shining new one. To a lot of people, as to myself, it is just home. Burl Markham, West of the Night. We're very privileged to have Dr. Alfred Petigo with us tonight. He is the founder and president of the Global Institute for Development Evidence Guide. He has a multidisciplinary background and experience of 25 plus years in policy analysis with a focus on impact evaluation and inclusive green growth. So the focus is a lot on green growth, on women's rights. That's another big aspect of GUIDE. Dr. Latigo is particularly passionate and committed to evidence-based policy research with experience in diverse areas. He has a master's degree in economics and from England, a PhD from Pacific University in economics. And in the course of his career, Alfred Petigo has been associated with several national, regional, and international institutions in policy-related areas. These include the African Development Bank, the World Bank, International Food Policy Research Institute, United Nations agencies, and universities worldwide. He's published 90-plus paper presentations and co-authored 70 scholarly publications, also the author of this book, The Best Options for Africa. And he loves golf. Are you a scratch golfer, Dr. Petigo? Maybe he is. He'll be speaking tonight about Africa, myths, challenges, and opportunities. And now please join me in welcoming Dr. Alfred Mutigo.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much, Rob, for your kind words of introduction. And indeed, I feel honored for your invitation to this great Dallas Philosophers Forum. I'm very happy and honored to be amidst very, very great people of Texas. We used to refer to them as the cowboys, but I don't see that these days. And I stand here as a proud American to be. I also stand before you as the son of an African from Uganda, once the British called the Pearl of Africa. I will say welcome to Africa, or shall I say welcome home? Because I believe this is where everything else started, isn't it? I'm sure you'll be very surprised to know that most evolution scholars believe that the oldest inhabited territory on Earth is Africa. And this is where human species actually originated. You won't be surprised to know from me today that all of you seated here actually originated from Africa. Did you know that? Good. That's very interesting. And Africa, as such, the original population, which is supposed to be hardier than those who moved away to other continents like Europe, Asia, remained in Africa, and we are part of that. The Europeans moved to Europe. The Americas came about 30,000 years ago to this continent. That is awesome, isn't it? What more, despite the little the world knows about Africa, civilization too started in Africa. Again, I'm sure you know that. From Egypt, then it spread to sub-Saharan Africa. And then in the what they call pre-Columbian days, it moved to the Americas. So first in Africa, then the other parts of the world. Now that we know that we share a common ancestry, that is Africa, we're all of the same ancestry. I'm more comfortable to talk about Africa now. Before I begin the presentation, I just want to know by a show of hands, how many of you have been to our ancestral land, Africa? Wow, 3, 4. Yeah, I thought none so that I could lie a bit, but that is very good. And again, a second question is, what is the worst thing you have heard about Africa? This is not a rhetorical question. I want to know what you feel. Just shout it out. What is the worst thing you have heard about Africa? Worst thing about Africa?
Civil war.
Civil war?
Child soldiers?
Corruption.
Uncivilized. Uncivilized.
Uncivilized?
Yeah, the people there are uncivilized or savages, that it's wild, all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that anyway, yeah. Now, well, that's very good. Now there are two things we need to know. First, I have in mind that we have to talk about how the media covers Africa and the consequences thereof. Second, we shall talk about the challenges and opportunities about Africa. What I'm saying is Africa is not, after all, what you hear about from the media. To me, there are at least four reasons why we have a very bad portrayal of Africa. And I'm going to discuss that briefly before we move on to other areas. And this is because we believe myriad myths abound about Africa. You hear all sorts of things about Africa. For decades, the only news reported about Africa was bleak, just as Rob was, read about a few minutes ago. And it is a distorted image of the continent. The Africa that you hear about all the time is the Africa of dark continent, homogeneous continent. Others believe that Africa is just one entity, one country. They speak African, one language. And the Africa of HIV/AIDS, the Africa of malaria, the Africa of famine and poverty. Some believe it is the Africa of crisis, Africa of disasters. Recently, it became the Africa of Ebola. And only a few weeks ago, it is the Africa of the Zika virus. That I don't know about. So all sorts of things are said about Africa. But in the interest of time, I will demystify only a few of these misperceptions, which I call. Where's my... Is it on now?
No, let me turn it on.
Right on the side, right?
It's on, yeah. There you go.
Okay. One thing is about... It's not very important, but I want to remind you that Africa is not what you see on the maps. Will you know that the world map you always look at is wrong? Do you know that? Well, the size of Africa compared to the northern countries, I failed my instructions. If you look at the map of Africa and compare it to North America and Greenland, you'll think that they are the same size. But the Africa you see now is totally different than what you see on the map. Africa, China, India are distorted despite access to accurate satellite today. You see the same map, whereas it is not correct. And these maps were produced way back in 1596, those days to help sailors, find their treasures. And unfortunately, it remained the same. It gives the right shapes of countries, but at the cost of the size. So Africa is the second largest continent in the world. And Africa is so big that you can see it can fill the continental United States. See, you see there? I'm sorry.
Just push the
middle. Which one?
Just the middle.
All right.
Just push the middle.
Yeah, you can see this is USA. And then China. It defeats European countries, Japan and all that. That's how big Africa is. Amazing, isn't it? Not as the map portrays. And Africa is not homogeneous as many people think. It is diverse, made up of 54 countries, 1.1 billion people, And out of that, there's a fast-growing middle-class population of over 370 million. By middle-class, we mean persons getting an average of $3,000 per month. And there are 3,000 languages. They don't speak African. 3,000 languages. But major ones are Swahili. Where I come from, we speak that. Hausa, Western Africa, Fulani, Western Africa. And English is spoken officially in 25 countries. The rest, we have French speaking, Arabic speaking, and Portuguese speaking. Africa also is known for its natural resource endowment. Large quantities of natural resources like diamonds, gold, bauxite, whatever, name them, are found there. And most of which, at the moment, are undiscovered. So should you think of investment of any kind, go to Africa. That's where you get it. While not all African countries are commodity rich, 12% of the world's oil reserves are found in Africa. 40% of the world's gold, again, Africa, with South Africa being the highest producer of gold. And then 80% to 90% of its chromium and platinum, again, that is from Africa. So Africa is home to, also home to 60% of the world's underutilized agricultural land. Talking about Africa, we could talk briefly about the image painted about the continent. And you find that typical of the media, aid workers, and sometimes it is simply out of ignorance. When you get this kind of image in the United States media, I mean, the first impression, if I were one who has never traveled, would believe it and say that, oh yeah, this is a continent where everybody is starving and there's nothing. And as a result, you might know about Oxfam, the international aid agency based in the UK. Recently, they appealed to the international community to ban these kind of images because they know, one, it is unproductive. First, two, it is depressing. And three, it does not actually contribute to more AIDS, as they think. Because once, according to them, if I'm stinking rich, when I see this, I'm able to pour money. Like our brother and sister, you know, from the church, you know, distributing aid, I mean money, and in his church, of course, it works. People donate money for that purpose. But now it has been found that it is unproductive to go for that kind of appeal. Talking about perceptions, like I said earlier on, it is attributed also to ignorance. I'll tell you a story when I was in the UK for my graduate studies way back in 1982. I took with me my little daughter. She was only 2 years old at that time, Pamela. And a guy called Bill, who was a tutorial assistant at the university, invited me for tea just to get information from me. And the first question he asked me was, how did you come to the UK? I looked at him and smiled. I said, well, I flew in by Uganda Airlines. And he asked, I mean, you could see that he was really curious. I said, huh, are the planes for Uganda Airlines akin to those of British Airways? And I looked at him, I said, oh yeah, they are. They are the same. As if that was not enough, he went to ask me about whether we had houses,
similar to those in the UK, houses for living in. I said, no, we don't. Actually, my father was a wealthy guy, so he could afford to own a big tree with big branches, and that could accommodate up to 10 persons in the family, in the luxurious canopies of the tree. And he looked surprised and at the same time sympathetic with me. And when I saw that he was genuinely ignorant, I said, oh no, Bill, that's not the case. We actually have houses, and it could be better than some of the houses I see in rural areas in the UK. Then he said, oh. But he didn't look convinced. But when we continued, I started, you know, my flying lessons for my private pilot's license. He came to me, Alfred, and he said, you can fly? I mean, I said, oh yeah, I've got an instructor, that's why. And I'm doing very well. And I'm sure, actually I was solo at that time. So that is the kind of thing. Bill, to me, is not alone in this saga. By displaying despair of hopelessness like this, I think the world is going crazy. I don't think most of Americans would believe that this kind of thing is going on. Now we have also that myth that people living in Africa are not, after all, educated, as it's almost the kind of thing you mentioned, right? Civilization. But I just mentioned that civilization actually started in Africa. By the way, I'm not marketing Africa. I'm trying to tell you what is real. People living in Africa are not educated, but then in recent decades, Sub-Saharan Africa has experienced some of the most dramatic increases in elementary school enrollment. In fact, the UNESCO, that is the United Nations Economic and Social Commission for United Nations, reported that over 200 million children are being enrolled every year. That gives a very big boost to education. But then one striking information that the U.S. Census in 2000 revealed is that immigrants born in Africa have the highest level of education attainment in the U.S. when compared to other immigrants. That's not me. I picked this from the U.S. Census. And that 49% of African immigrants to the U.S. aged 25 years and older possesses a basic bachelor's degree compared to 33% of Europeans who are immigrants in the USA, 45% of Asians, 6% of Central Americans, and 25% of South Americans. And also the UNDP estimates that, that is the United Nations Development Program, they estimate that since 1990, Africa has been losing professionals to the tune of 20,000 every year. And if you do your maths, from 1990 to this moment, actually 500,000 of professionals have been lost to the USA, to Europe, and I'm one of the victims. So that is just to clear that kind of myth about education. And then the other myth is, like you mentioned, Africa is, I think it is my colleague from the other side, Africa is a continent of wars. When you see all these things reported on CNN, Fox News, whatever it is, the impression given is that it is a continent of wars. And as I'm speaking now, there are only about six countries which are at war at the moment. So what the media is reporting is about five countries. I've just told you there are 54 countries in Africa. So that is a real big myth. And it sends a message of sympathy, pity, to the extent that donors will ask themselves, what should we do? Let's take money to the hungry. Let's deliver medicines to those who are ill. We should send peacekeeping force. But experience has shown that these things don't work. They are not sustainable. Africa is the corrupt continent. I think you rightly mentioned. And to that, I want to tell you a short story about corruption in Africa. Although report shows that Africa is now improving in its corruption status, that is, Transparency International has done that report. Way back in 2005, a governor of one of the oil-rich states in Nigeria was arrested in London on a visit there. And he was arrested because there was cooperation between the London Metropolitan Police and an organization, a well-organized organization called Economic and Financial Crimes Commission of Nigeria. This was because he transferred $8 million to his personal account in the UK. And because of the cooperation between the agencies in Nigeria and the UK, they were able to arrest him. But then because of some slip-ups, he decided to escape because he dressed like a woman, a woman's dress, and went back to Nigeria. You know what happened? There was disgust among the people of Nigeria to the extent that he was impeached. Impeached. Because normally, governors of his kind, presidents, they have immunity from arrest. But he was arrested. And to this day, as we are talking, he is in jail. This is just to illustrate that African countries are now waking up, and they are very serious about issues relating to corruption. It is not tolerated. And like you have seen, there are 40% of African countries included in the Corruption Perception Index scored the same or better than China, Mexico, which are believed to be safe havens for investment. Now, I'm not trying to paint a rosy picture about Africa. Africa has got real challenges, as you all know. It is the richest resource in terms of natural resources, but then it has the poorest people also in the world. But then one would ask, as Rob was asking me a while ago, what would be the cause for this poverty or what is happening? According to economists, they believe that Africa's poverty can be attributed to its global encounters or encounters with the global community. And this brought about slavery, as you know, colonialism, now neo-colonialism, and apartheid, which has been broken only a couple of years back. And this indeed has a lot of impact on human development, which many people don't know. They ask, why is Africa poor? But that is one of the root causes. And if you look carefully throughout history, Africa is the only continent whose wealth has been systematically looted by other regions and its people, enslaved, or even killed. You have read about this, I'm sure. You can recall the 19th century scramble for Africa, which saw great powers rushing to control the wealth of Africa. The Europeans, the Arabs, at that time. And this can be compared also to what is happening now. There's a new kind of scramble for Africa. But this kind of scramble is quite different because it is now competition between the big powers, including our great United States, competing with France, Britain, China, and India for what is happening. That's why when you hear of strategic American bases, is there anybody in the armed forces here? Hands? No. Okay. So this is the new scramble for Africa, and all this contributes to the development of Africa. It leads to environmental degradation. It brings the very corruption we are talking about. It also makes leaders avoid the best practices for creating wealth through taxation, for example. And this is one of the reasons why we may say Africa is experiencing this kind of problem. Challenge two is education adequacy and quality. Yes, I just mentioned that education is improving in Africa, but still there are challenges. One of these includes high quality, the fact that high quality tertiary institutions are not adequate to absorb the increasing number of students, like I mentioned earlier on. And this, as a result, forces many Africans to come and study abroad. I'm one of the beneficiaries of that. My kids, most of them are educated in the USA. But then, there's a challenge as regards to studying abroad. Many educationists believe that the kind of education offered in the Western world, like in the USA, is not necessarily appropriate to the local conditions for development in Africa. Much as it is very highly, accepted, but then it does not address the current local situations in Africa. So, another reason, of course, is that flying, 24 hours to come to the U.S. is not affordable by poor average parents. And it brings a lot of, a disadvantage. Interesting challenge we have there is, of course, presidents hanging on to power until their grandchildren succeed them. That's a common thing. It's a very, very, very serious issue. And this is contrary to what the African Union prescribes for the African countries. African Union is a body that coordinates African countries for the purpose of achieving regional integration in Africa, with the hope that Africa will also become United States of Africa, like United States of America. A good example of such cases where people hang on to power is Rwanda. Only recently, people overwhelmingly voted that the president should remain in power until 2030. Can you believe that? And he's already 60 years old. So God knows whether he will rule when he's that takes him to what, 90 years old? And my own country, only last week, voted in the incumbent president for a fifth term of office. He's been there for 30 years. It gives the impression that there are no capable people to succeed. And there are many others who follow that, presidents of Gambia, Cameroon, Zimbabwe. The most vocal guy, Mugabe, is still hanging on to it. That's a serious problem. Food, water, health crisis, the world knows about it. Of the 36 countries in the world with severe food crisis, 21 are still found in Africa. Food crisis. When I walk around restaurants like this, I see lots of food being wasted. I wonder why this is happening. In fact, America has been rated as the most What is the word?
Wasteful.
Wasteful, that's the best word in the world. Yet there are people who need that kind of money, I mean food. It is a continent where clean water sometimes can be treated as luxury. Although there's plenty of rain, we have large water bodies like Lake Victoria and so on. It's a very serious issue. And it is where the highest number of deaths from preventable diseases like malaria is found. And of course, highest maternal and infant mortalities are found there. Highest infection rates and deaths due to, HIV, also in Africa, including deaths due to HIV/AIDS. Challenges of climate change. Again, we discussed this briefly with Rob a while ago. You know that Africa is not actually responsible for all the pollution globally arising from industrialization. But then it is the most vulnerable as far as the impacts of climate change is. And scientists have estimated that economic losses due to climate change effects can be up to 1.5 to 3% of gross domestic product, that is the total volume of a country's earnings or productivity. Leave alone the fact that because of this climate change, Africa is affected as far as electricity is concerned. Can you believe that 690 million of the 1 billion people still rely mostly on solid fuels for cooking? When you talk of cookers here, that is luxury in certain homes. But that does not mean that people in urban areas have the same problem. We are talking of the majority of the rural population. Now the other challenge is about foreign aid. In this book, which was published in about 5 or 6 years ago, I was able to advocate that foreign aid is not the best solution for Africa. The reason is foreign aid makes it easy for political leaders I've alluded to remain in power and use this kind of free money as their property to the extent that foreign aid contributes to about 60% of national budget. I don't think you see this here in the United States or Europe. The other problem, of course, is that large sums of money which end up in the pockets of politicians is used to brush off, opponents in politics. And a clear case is the case in my own country. When the incumbent president is campaigning, or like the elections here, with the likes of Trump, who is very popular, I understand. It really brings a lot of problems. I won't go into the details of that in the interest of time, but suffice it to say that free money does not lead to anything. And as a result of that, the case for Somalia is as a result of that issue. I was challenging my friend here that I don't believe in foreign aid, because if you know of a friend who has become rich like Trump because of charity money from a friend, then you'll show me. If you can also show to me that any developed country you know of, including the United States, became what it is now because of foreign aid from another country. Have you ever heard of that? Not UK, not Germany, not Denmark, not United States. Why Africa? And most advocates for foreign aid believe that when you go for big push, as they call it, Africa can become like United States. Wrong. That is not true. Because most of these developed countries took time. It is a gradual, you know, development to become what they are. There was nothing like big push, which was being pushed by the likes of Tony Blair, the Prime Minister of the UK. So that's a big challenge. I will not go into the details because of time. There is that part of Africa which the media doesn't show. You don't see such things on CNN or Fox News. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm blocking you.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Africa actually is becoming, in terms of development, much as you have heard about the problems or challenges, when it comes to telecommunications, it is the fastest growing economy in the world. And according to recent findings, that it is actually a funnel for growth. There are currently over 800 million mobile subscriptions in Africa. You know, in fact, it has surpassed that. That is statistics for 2013. And the annual mobile data revenues are expected to be, in fact, close to $10 billion. That is just to tell you that Africa is now coming up. You see that herdsman from Ghana, a rural area, he's using mobile, you know, to communicate with his fellow herdsmen. Again, innovation is not talked about Africa. This shows a drone which has been designed and manufactured by Nigerian Air Force engineers. And they came up with that drone which can fly at an altitude of 3,000 feet, 4 hours non-stop, which is a remarkable achievement. And there are so many of these kind of developments in different parts of Africa, from south to north. Very impressive. In my own country, they came up with the first solar bus, and it is now being considered for assembly, you know, 25 passengers, but obviously it can expand. It goes at about 50 miles per hour. So that's one of the... Again, governance is an issue, as we talked about, presidents hanging onto power, elections are rigged and all that. But Uganda has introduced presidential debate. This was only 2 weeks ago. All the candidates are there. They just discuss like Trump and others. It's okay. So this is the incumbent president. And he was also brought to task by his, you know, but unfortunately he won. He's now serving his fifth term, hopefully from any time now.
Is that a woman that was running as well in the debate?
Oh, right? Yeah. She's one of the presidential candidates. So there's a lady. That brings me to current female heads of state in the country, in the continent. There were about five by 2-3 years ago, but of course they left power. But these are the current ones for Central African Republic, Liberia, and then Mauritius. So when we talk of gender equality, I hope you'll give opportunity to a lady one day for the United States. That's why I put that question mark. What about USA? Would you like Hillary? That's not for us. Africa has also breathtaking safaris. At least Rob has been to Kenya and seen some of those, you know, safaris in Uganda. You'll have opportunity for the mountain gorillas in Uganda, the elephants. And if you have a chance to take a relay with people, that would be very interesting, isn't it? That's some of the, you know, the kind of fun you'll have when you go there. You see, that guy is taking off. Again, you should not be worried about where to sleep when you go to the safari. We have, I mean, there are beautiful places, you know. You can enjoy yourself, go for honeymoon, even if it means rededicating your marriage. Like some of us who are seniors, we can always go back and relax in those places. Wonderful beaches ranging from Zanzibar in Tanzania, Seychelles, that is our Hawaii, very pristine and all that. We have Mombasa, at least, again, Rob, you have been there, Durban in South Africa. Those are the kind of beaches. I came to those in Florida, LA, you know. The difference is the weather is fantastic. Again, people talk about snow, hot weather. We have mountains with snowy peaks in Africa. My own country, which is called Mountains of the North, you have cable trains and all that for, you know, and mountain climbing, neighboring Tanzania, then Mount Kenya in Kenya. So we have all those. Gorgeous waterfalls are also found there in Uganda, Victoria Falls. By the way, I'm not trying to, I'm from Uganda. A lot of people say charity begins at home. At least I've been there. This is about 2 hours from my native home. That is in Zimbabwe. Beautiful. I've decided to show this as a contradiction to life. This picture I brought in deliberately because one, the king I'm trying to portray here is the remaining last absolute monarch in the world and also in Africa. He's only 47 years old. He took office, I mean, when his father died, he inherited. And every year, he chooses one wife among virgins between the age of 17 to 19. And up to 60 to 70,000 of these girls come to dance in what they call reed dance. And then the king walks and pinpoints whom, you know, he will have. To date, as we are talking, it's 14 wives. This year coming, he's going to get the 15th wife. And each woman or wife has a palace akin to this. This is one of the palaces. A Mercedes, a driver, bodyguard to look after that. He has a jet, personal jet. He comes often to Las Vegas, to Dubai, and all those places. So these are some of the two wives. They are beautiful, isn't it? Now, the irony is, this is one of the poorest countries in the world. Poverty is at large in this country. So one wonders why this kind of monarchy should continue in a country like that. It is fun. I've been there several times. But that does not impress me because poverty is really serious. And if these guys knew what they were doing, if they had the mind, I don't think they would go for this kind of thing. I just saw that as a contradiction to them. Yeah. The good news or good part of Africa then is people are still traditional. In fact, I'm disappointed because my wife didn't wear one of these dresses. She has both of these. But the excuse she gave me was that it's too cold.
No, it's the rain is wet and it's long, so it would, you know, it would all be wet.
All right, you win. So this is the kind of dresses they have. Americans, when they go there, of course, they also join suits. You can see some, you know, dressed in the same kind of. That is mine, a jacket with a long robe. They call it kanzu, but I fear because you know, when it is, as she says, wet, it sweeps the floor. We have these, the Ethiopians also next door, our neighbors. That's why we don't look the same as they say, think that Africans look the same. We are not the same. When she was in Addis Ababa, they thought she was an Ethiopian also. This is West Africa, Nigeria, Guinea, all have different, you know. About cities and all that, the reason why I've shown this is African cities are becoming hubs for investment, technology, when you talk of, you know, that is where you should be thinking of. You know, in Uganda, in Luanda, Angola, Abidjan, Lagos. I mean, many people don't know that, you know, all these facilities, amenities are there. What you have, that's Cairo, that's Nairobi, Kenya, the airport, one of the biggest, you know. So what I'm trying to say is there are over 100 of such urban cities in Africa. Despite the problems you hear, you know. So that is, you know, the network of roads, Having said that, for those who are thinking of future plans to go to Africa, what are the opportunities in Africa? You have heard about the challenges, you have heard about the myths about Africa. I'm sure you have demystified all that. Now, Africa, according to many investors, is becoming an attractive hub for foreign investment. This is because of recent reforms in policies, governance, for example. You can do good business in Africa. And it is now ranked as easier to do business than either China or India. I don't know about Mexico, which Trump doesn't like. But Africa is surely becoming a place for business. And it is estimated that by the year 2040, the continent will have a larger workforce than China or India, totaling to 1.1 billion people now. In economics, the more population you have, the more productivity you get. So there's a significant boost in the spending power of Africans. Like I mentioned before, the middle class population is rising rapidly to the tune of 370 million, which means they have the purchasing power to buy goods and services. We have alluded to Africa's natural resource endowment, plenty of natural resources. Many have not been unearthed. So this is where Africa can become a factory or granary to the world, just like US and other countries have been in the past. Phenomenal growth. Africa is growing at a terrific speed. Now for some of you who like graphics, can see that the growth rate, I've succeeded. Now, when you look at this in brown, I mean, this is, this one is Africa. And the USA is way down here. Can you see? And then China, India, of course, at the moment are top. That is the so-called BRIC countries. That's Brazil, Russia, India, and China. And Africa also, I mean, South Africa is a member of the So Africa is now home to 7 of the top 10 fastest growing economies in the world. That includes Angola, Ghana, and the other countries. And as you see the map here, all those in dark blue reflect growth rate of 7%. And the USA growth rate, as we are talking now, is about 2.8%, right? That's the growth rate of the USA. Yes, I'm about to conclude, but I would like to woo some of you who are thinking of investment in Africa.
or you have children or grandchildren who may be interested in or thinking Africa is home for investment, there are lots and lots of opportunities. Forget about the myth. This is the reality. Agriculture is tough because 60% of the world's total uncultivated arable land, arable, which can be cultivated to produce crops, is Africa. And I think that is the opportunity. When it comes to tourism, you have seen those pristine lodges, pristine beaches and all that. African countries like Kenya, Uganda, Seychelles, Tanzania have become tourist destinations, the best tourist destinations. Of course, when they hear about Ebola, when you call any of those countries, they even don't know what the symptoms are. They have never heard. They might have heard, but there's nothing like that. Mining of solid minerals, again, plenty of minerals I've already alluded to. Some are still on the ground. So that is another important opportunity. To friends who are interested, you could talk to them about infrastructure. That is the engine of growth. Without roads, without power, without dams, irrigation facilities, development can be a challenge. So that's another attractive area. And according to World Bank, Africa needs about $80 billion for its infrastructure. And that means there's a lot of opportunity, including IT, I mean technology, which you are practicing. Nowadays, what we call fast-moving consumer goods. This is another area. We talk about retail products, manufactured products, food, beverages. I mean, we get quite a lot. In fact, as we are talking, Walmart and other big companies are already in Africa. And they're moving very fast because they know there is opportunity in Africa. So they are quite immense, there's immense opportunity. And like Rob introduced me, I presented this in my capacity as a development economist who has worked in over 40, traveled and worked in over 40 African countries. And to me, I think this is the opportunity. But then one problem that African governments face is governance. How to make their investments productive. And our role as an institute, the Global Institute for Development Evidence, is to help policymakers design their programs, policies, projects, so that it is based on evidence of what they believe works and which can be replicated elsewhere cost effectively. And that's what we do. We are currently based in Hawaii with a future plan to open an office also in Dallas. But our focus is in African countries and later perhaps Asia. That's where we are going to be based. I wouldn't like to go into the details, but those interested can visit the website as it is indicated there. But we think we could contribute to Africa's development by helping policymakers base their plans or policies on what they want, not on political whim, as it happens everywhere. And I think the US is following suit because one of the guys who did the research on that found that United States has spent $1 trillion on social programs, and this has not worked. And that is simply because the projects or programs on social aspects are not based on evidence of what people believe works. So that is what is all about what we do. This is a satellite photo of the world at night. That's how the world looks when you are up taken from a satellite.
Can you see anything? Can you see Africa?
South Africa.
Only South Africa, right? And you can see North America, it's really glowing at night. Europe too. See, Africa is really, really, really dark. So when you are thinking of going to Africa, you should think of bringing light to Africa. Right? And that is what Africa needs. And that's each one of us is trying to do that. And I believe there is amazing opportunity for everyone else. Having said that, I would like to thank you for your attention. I'm sorry I might have taken longer than that.
Okay, let's open it up for questions. Yes.
I'd like to ask you about two statements you made that may or may not be related to each other. You were talking about the high percentage of immigrants to the West that have completed their undergraduate work.
Sorry, they have completed?
They have bachelor's degrees.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I wonder if they are coming here in order to get advanced degrees and then go back to Africa, or they're just immigrating for the economic opportunity we have. And the second question is, you said that the kind of education that they get here is not applicable to the situation they have at home. I wonder if you'd expand on that.
Right. Beginning with the first one, I think there are several groups or categories of people who come here for purposes of education. There are those who just come specifically to study and go back upon attainment or whatever qualification they get. Then there are others, like you rightly mentioned. There could be civil strife, there could be, you know, curiosity of coming to the United States or Europe, and, you know, don't ask why I'm here, because mine is a difference in a situation. So when they come here with all that dream of harnessing, as you say, America is a land of opportunity, but then on getting here, they fail to get jobs. They end up doing odd jobs, for example. Find a guy with a PhD or master's driving Uber. Is it Uber?
Yeah.
Uber. Or ordinary taxi. And this is as a result of problems of certification in some cases. Like I'm an environmental economist, if I want to practice to do certain things, I mean, they will ask for American certification, which I know with or without, I can still do the job, but unfortunately that is the rule. So to answer your question, quite a number of people come here to, you know, for better, I mean, greener pastures, they think, but often they get disappointed too. But those who come with the aim of starting their own business, or like me, I knew about it, so I said, well, I'll rather run my organization. I don't look for a job. Now, as for relevance of education here compared to the needs of Africa, yes, I think there are a number of things. I mean, I'm not an educationist, but I can say that I think Africans need to be trained or educated to, I mean, the knowledge which should be imparted to them should be relevant to the current needs of Africa. The curriculum itself should be changed. For example, when I was a student, we had to learn about European history, European geography. We also learned about American, history, which is okay, but is that surely worth the money spent? Does it really reflect what is happening? I mean, what they can contribute to the development of Africa.
That is the issue. I don't know whether I've answered your question.
If they're going to be in graduate school in engineering, they're not going to get a lot of U.S. or European history. They're going to get a lot of engineering courses. And I think that's what you're referring to. That those kinds of things that are applicable to going back and helping with the infrastructure or whatever.
Yeah, when I say that, I don't really mean all the courses offered here is irrelevant. I mean, engineering is engineering anywhere in the world. But then when we talk about medicine, for example, that's a different area. I mean, a doctor here, I'm sorry to say, but even diagnosis of malaria is a challenge. They cannot do it. And a doctor who is trained here, even if she has gone, he or she has gone through residency here, has to do a lot of work when he or she goes back to Africa. And I think
Vice versa.
So, I mean, in Africa, I mean, a nurse in Africa may have some challenge, you know, here. That's why they have to undergo some further orientation in the U.S. So, I'm not really saying that education is not applicable. I am trained in three continents, as Rovers, you know, in Europe, here, and Africa. At least I know which is applicable to me. And which is not. Yeah.
I had a question about foreign aid. We had talked in your lecture. You talked about how it's detrimental to Africa,
mm-hmm.
and part of the reason is that a lot of that money just goes to the rulers, and they send it to their Swiss bank accounts and all. Do you think that the foreign aid is also detrimental because there, some of the money gets to the people, but then the people don't have, they have money, free money coming in, they don't have the incentive to get an education, to go work. We've seen some of those types of issues with Native Americans here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get your thoughts on the other parts. And foreign aid is not the answer if you're espousing that there are more drawbacks to the foreign aid than pluses. Then what is the alternative to that?
That's right. Yeah, like I said, I'm not a strong proponent of foreign aid. The reason is that when you get it easy, it goes easy. They say, I mean, English proverb is what, easy come, easy go. And that is the same thing with foreign aid. All what's it equates in African countries is to bring about a windfall of, call it wealth or resources, which is of short term. And because the money comes easy, I mean, nobody bothers, you know, to follow regulations of governance, for example, or accountability, transparency is not exercised. So what happens is that such money is spent in a way that whoever is in the ruling government chooses to do. And that, to me, is destructive because it destroys the institutional structure of, you know, governments in Africa. And, of course, the givers of such aid describe African governments corrupt, when actually they too should be blamed for that. A case in point is that of the Nigerian government and many other heads of state who siphon billions of dollars to their safe havens or secret accounts overseas. Now, a good example is, even in the U.S., if you are caught with stolen goods, what are you? You may not have stolen the, you know, goods, but it happens to be stolen goods. You are prosecuted, isn't it? Is that correct?
Yeah.
So to me, the countries where African funds or money is lying in safe haven, like Switzerland, and could be here. I think the U.S. has become very strict too with such money. Those same countries to me are also corrupt, just like those who send the money to those countries. And to me the alternative, as per your question, is you should not give money. Teach them what to do. The Chinese proverb says what?
Teach a man to fish.
Yeah, teach him how to fish and he will do. I mean, giving for, I mean, food aid. I will eat that food tomorrow, I don't have. Give him medicine. That is short-lived. Ebola tomorrow will come, which cannot be treated by that same medicine. But if you teach this guy to make wealth, create wealth, he will have money to buy medicine, he will have money to buy food, he will have money for whatever he needs, education. He has the money, hot, cold cash in his hands, not just handout. To me, the solution is to help Africans create wealth. And that way, they can be on their feet. Whatever is given is temporary, and it simply perpetuates, you know, poverty. And I don't think if there's sense among the donors, they will not waste money just like that. It's simply not sustainable.
Question back here.
To what extent is it a problem that the national boundaries were drawn by the colonial powers? And if it is a problem, you know, is there any discussion about, you know, some solution to it?
Yeah, that takes us to Berlin Conference. That was way back in 19th century. And the boundaries, was the shortcut to the first...
You're going to reverse it to the left.
Yeah, I mean, I thought to go right to the top. Anyway, so I'm asking for too much, as usual with my... when you look at the map of Africa, I think new technology should work on this. And I would like to go straight to, you know. Yeah, you see, this is Africa, map of Africa with 54 countries. And when you look at these countries, one would think they are completely different ethnic groups. Of course, there's a variation. But when you look, for example, at Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, there's a lot of relationship among these countries. And when you are here at the border, say Uganda-Kenya border, these are the same people, they speak the same language, same culture, economy the same. But these boundaries were created, as I said, during the scramble for Africa in the 19th century. The British, you know, did it just for their, you know, interest to rule. That's what they wanted to impose here, you know, under the war between the South and the North in America. So this is the kind of situation African countries have found themselves. They are the same people, but now they are divided. You know, the principle of the British was then divide and rule. If you can be able to divide them, but God also did that, I think, in the Tower of Babel, if you, you know, some of you who know. So that's it. And I think it is a serious problem, but with the upcoming of the United States of Africa, which they are fighting for, I believe that problem will be solved. I'm not sure whether I answered your, to your satisfaction.
Oh, yes. Right.
So I just was curious. I saw a film recently called Fire in the Blood about HIV/AIDS and trying to break the pharmaceutical patents to make the drugs available at a reasonable price in Africa. And I wondered if you've seen that film.
No.
If you have, what you thought about it. No. Okay.
That he's advocating for cheaper drugs.
Well, it talked about it. It's the story about how you can now buy the antiviral drugs in Africa for $300 a year per person, and it used to be $10,000. That's what it is here. But but it's a story about how the African countries work together, or some of them, and aid agencies to try and a group that was manufacturing the drugs out of Switzerland. But the reason I asked you is because it presents a lot of different images of Africa. Some of the cities that you showed us and the wealth and the technology and some of the poverty. And it moves back and forth between these, and I wondered if you had seen the film, if you felt like it was a fair representation.
No, I've not seen it, but I think institutions like Global Fund, they are actually working hand in hand with World Health Organization and UNICEF to see if African countries can have cheap or affordable generic drugs in the continent. Let me mention one thing here about drugs and also HIV/AIDS. You know, there's a lot of, I'm sorry, but this is not my own making, but there's speculation or theories that HIV/AIDS or even Ebola is something, at least that's what Africans believe. And I think their argument seems to hold a bit of water, that some of these virus or pathogens, as you may call them, are technologically engineered in labs for some ulterior motives, which I won't go. What should I say? Yeah. So when it comes to drugs, vaccines, people are very, very, very speculative, suspicious, worried about some of those initiatives. Certain African countries, for example, have refused to accept vaccines simply because of the notion that they are meant to be used for infertility purposes. And the HIV/AIDS case, I'm not an authority in that, but I think there's some speculation about it also. The drugs themselves are really meant to cure, but they have serious side effects which have not been studied. For example, liver-related diseases arise out of that. And I think until they discover something serious, you know, people are desperate, they need, oh yes, this is AIDS, and they take it. But then one has to be cautious about the negative impacts, which really are not taken seriously by the same givers or donors of this medicine. To the extent that some Africans have decided to go traditional. I don't know whether you have heard of the president of Gambia. He says he's now a witch doctor who can cure AIDS.
Okay, let's give another round of applause. I also want to welcome his wife, Sarah, and his daughter, Pamela. We're very, very pleased that you're here as well. We would like to make, we have a couple things for you, Dr. Olson. So first off, we provided you a Dallas Monsters Warm Cup. Do you drink coffee?
Wow.
You drink coffee?
Plenty.
Okay, so why don't you open that, and I'll show you here. So you can think about, some of the great Greek philosophers there.
Any camera?
Socrates and Aristotle, hopefully. And then we also would like to provide you a token gift of $25 for your institute.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And thanks again for coming and for your lovely family. And the next meeting is March 8, 2016, Sexual Autonomy and Deception by Jennifer Matty of SME. And see you in 2 weeks.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you.